Seekers, Malloy here on Nova M Radio. That's not the Beach Boys. Thanks for tuning in. Hope to stick around a bit tonight. You know, as much as you can stand. Carol in Minnesota sent me an email here a little bit earlier today about an email she received. It's from the HillaryClinton.com website. It's, Hillary Clinton's fundraising or presidential campaign site. Carol writes first, Jesus H. Christ, a chance to have retirement dinner with Hillary to pay off her debt? WTF? Hillary, my husband lost his job and I recently became fully disabled. We're hanging on by the skin of our teeth trying to keep our house. I know it could be much worse, but right now I'm not feeling that all that good about all of this. And Hillary wants me to help her with her debt. And then lots of ha ha ha's. And then she says, yeah, let me get right on that. Hillary, if I had a wonderful opportunity to go out and have a nice dinner, it would be my husband and son. Hillary, care to contribute to give me and my family a nice dinner out at, say, Red Lobster? Here's the letter. Dear Carol, summer is the time for simple pleasures, family vacations, baseball games, and dinner out under the stars. At least it is if you aren't running for president. It sure is nice having a little more time on my hands, and I'd love to spend some of it with you. Would you like to join me for dinner? During the campaign, I had the chance a few times to grab meals with supporters, but they were always rushed, thanks to the frenetic pace of the campaign. This is my first chance to sit down and spend some real one-on-one time with you. If you enter today, we could be having dinner together soon. Join me for dinner. Make a $5 contribution today. Now, my staff has been calling this my retirement dinner, not because I'm retiring, of course, but because we're working on retiring the debt we owe to small vendors all over the country. Everyone who acts today will have the chance to join me, along with a guest, for a dinner to talk about whatever you'd like. So, let's go to dinner. Every little bit helps, and even $5 can make a real difference. Contribute $5 now, and you and I could be enjoying a summer dinner together soon. Join me for dinner. Make a $5 contribution today. Thank you so much for all your wonderful support. All the best, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Now, the way you contribute to this, actually what you're doing is entering a lottery, obviously. Scattered throughout the email here from the Clinton campaign is the link to click on to go over there and make your $5 or $10 or $15 or $20 or $25 or $35. So you have a bunch of options. Donation. And then I guess there's a form you can fill out. And then when they get all the money in and all the forms filled out, I guess the lucky winner will get to go to dinner with Hillary Clinton. Ah, but the opening sentence, for so many people, is this true? Dear Carol, summer is a time for simple pleasures, family vacations. Who does that right now, huh? Certainly not out here in the great unwashed masses, Hillary. Baseball games. How long has it been since Senator Clinton has gone to a baseball game? A decent seat is what now? $35, $40 a ticket? How much are hot dogs at the old ballpark? $5? And then she says, and dinner out under the stars. Do you mean at a restaurant or do you mean homeless people? And she says it's nice having a little more time on her hands, and she wants to spend some of it with Carol. Now, I'm not picking on Hillary because she's Hillary. I mean, this is, you know, anybody would do this. Any political operative who has a huge campaign debt, like Hillary, would do this. You don't have to be running for president. You could be running for senator and lose your ass. You know, whatever. But the pitch, whoever wrote that pitch for donations to Hillary Clinton campaign had to, I don't know, used to work for, a magazine subscription agency or what's that one, Kathy, where they come up with the big check to your house? Publishers Clearinghouse, right. Fill in the coupon. Enter today. Enter online. Enter any place. Go to your local post office. Christ, we don't care. Go to a gas station. Maybe your church has some forms. I think that this would be very easy for Hillary to handle. I think this is going to work for her. She must have a massive database. And as she said, 16 million people voted for it. She doesn't need $5. All she needs is $1. No. All she needs is 50 cents from each one of those 16 million voters. That'll be $8 million. I think her campaign debt is, what, $10 million? And Bill can chip in the other two from, you know, one of his book deals or whatever. But that's all it takes. Not $5, just a buck. 50 cents, a buck. And I'm reasonably certain that the people who supported Hillary Clinton are willing to bail her out. I mean, come on, folks. This is, this is the person who was running for president that 16 million voters wanted. And that damn Barack Obama came out of nowhere and, I won't say stole the nomination, but wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know. So here's Hillary left with this massive campaign debt. I don't know how presidential politics works, but I do know, given the revelation of the income of the Clintons, it would seem to me that Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton could just write a check and pay off the campaign debt. I don't know. Is that not allowed in presidential politics? I have no idea. Anyway, Carol, thanks for sending in the letter. It was really cool. Prairie 2 wrote, Mike, what became of the idea tax cuts for the rich will increase tax revenue? Chucklenuts is posting a record deficit of $500 billion. And this doesn't cover big ticket items like the war. And you know how Bush likes to cut vital programs. Congress will have to fund them anyway. A more realistic number for the deficit can be glimpsed from the new debt ceiling that will allow the Treasury to borrow another $1.1 trillion over the current debt. And this is probably calculated as just enough to last through the election. And the debt does not include billions certain agencies are able to take on themselves, or hundreds of billions they steal from trust funds like Social Security. Can't steal from the Highway Trust Fund anymore. It's $2 billion in the hole for the first half of the year, with costs doubling and revenue down from reduced gas consumption. Count how many bridges you cross the next time you drive anywhere. A high percentage of those are listed as deficient. Home values nationwide are plunging faster than a rusty bridge span, and this translates into a plunge in real estate tax revenue for local governments that are already being hit with spiraling costs. Local governments must cover everything from increased fuel costs to rising crime. People are stealing everything from manhole covers to streetlights. China needs to scrap metal. They still have an economy. The only good economic news today was that the latest round of World Trade Organization talks collapsed after 7 years of negotiations. It's expected it'll be years before they restart. Seems that India was getting tired of the spiraling suicide rate among their farmers. The suicide rate in the U.S. is climbing as more people find out the American dream has been stolen from them. Despair is turning to anger as more people realize that the collapsing economy is not just in their head. People don't know who to blame, so they blame the people they've been taught to hate already. watch your back. Yeah. Sort of a miserably negative assessment there from Prairie 2, and as usual, it's right on. George was handed a, what was it, $170 billion budget surplus by Bill Clinton, and told that if he just, you know, maintained spending at the level the Clinton administration had been doing, that there would be, what, a $5 or $6 trillion accumulative surplus over the next 10 years from the time George took office. And he has turned that, just for the sake of argument, let's call it $6 trillion, he's turned that into, how deeply in debt are we now? $10 trillion? It's astonishing. And people, you know, the polls show that McCain and Barack Obama are running neck and neck. There are people out there who want more of this. Oh, some of you people are just nuts.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's 22 past the hour. We also have a moment with Bob tonight. I think we do. I think it's on the rundown here. I was watching some network presentation today. Not sure if it was cable or over the air. Really doesn't matter. They're all kind of the same, I guess. But they were talking about the reporter was talking about an increase in people using motorcycles because of the high cost of not just gasoline, but also the lousy resale value on these big behemoth bastardy SUVs and things they bought. They can't get out from under them. They're stuck. So park it is the best way to do it. Make your payments and quit bitching. But a lot of folks had motorcycles that they have kind of mothballed for the past 10 years. Some of these bikes were 10, 15, 20 years old. So right now there's a rush on motorcycle repair shops. A lot of people getting them, fixed up because, when you can get, 110 miles a gallon or whatever it is, it kind of makes sense to get the hell out of the SUV and get on the hog, right? So they casually mentioned in the piece, in the story, though, that since motorcycles are four times more likely to be severely injured or killed in traffic than someone riding in an enclosed vehicle, they tagged this story with that little bit at the end. And, kind of a downer, kind of a bummer, like, oh, hey, look at everybody riding their motorcycle. Oh, you're going to die. It's just kind of a bummer. But there's an upside to it, and Kathy and I were talking about this the other day, because living here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, sometimes we'll drive about an hour north of Atlanta, and we are in the Appalachian Mountains. And there's some real twisty, windy roads. I mean, hairpin curves and back stitches, or whatever the hell they call that, where the signs say 10 miles an hour, and the motorcyclists love to go zipping through those mountains. And they don't go 10 miles an hour. Hell no. They lay those hogs down so they're almost even with the ground. I wonder how they keep their legs from getting scratched up or ripped up from the pavement. But the upside to all this, especially in the states with no helmet law, you know where I'm going, don't you, is there is going to be a surplus of organs, body parts, for people desperately waiting for hearts and kidneys and livers and corneas and maybe some skin grafting and, bladders and, whatever is transplantable now. With the increase in motorcycle riders, mostly men who get on the motorcycles and say, "I don't wear no goddamn helmet. Government can't tell me what to do." That's good. That's good. Anytime we get passed, when we're out driving up and down through the mountains, and we get passed, damn the double yellow line. That means nothing to a motorcyclist. When he's ready to go, he'll go. But anytime we're passed by a motorcyclist, we always applaud. And if it's a motorcyclist with no helmet on, we blink our headlights and really give him a kind of a standing ovation. Not that that's possible when you're trying to drive the minivan like we are still stuck with. But the upside is more organ parts. So if you are out there waiting for a kidney or two, or a liver, or a spleen, whatever is transplantable, heart, corneas. What else, Kathy? What else goes? Skin. Skin gets transplanted. What else? Anything else? Anything else that you can think of that gets?
There's lots.
Yeah, I know. Valves and epiglottises and little things that click on and off inside your circulatory system. Just continue to hold on a little bit longer, because that's an extra benefit to the increase in oil prices. Is the fact that more people are riding motorcycles now, which means what I just said. That's an uplifting story, though. I really think so. Not for the people riding the motorcycles, but for the people patiently waiting. More organs. All right. Break here. When we come back, we have a quick email from Hernan in Buenos Aires, Argentina. We're going to share that with you, and then we're going to move on. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
In the middle of July, sun was shining. Footsteps echo down the hall. No one's there at all. Dial your number, but your voice is mine. Everything is inside out. I don't know what it's about. You keep getting stranger by the day. Yeah. Stranger by the day. Yeah.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. You guys are just too entertaining. Some nights we get the program started, and I just want to sit here and read the emails that come in. I like this one from Cap Mary in Memphis, who writes a true story. From told at a folk fest here some years ago by a musician whose name I've forgotten. The folk song enthusiast was whizzing through the Arkansas mountains in his truck, happily in search of the elusive song of the folk. Nearing one hairpin turn, here comes another truck straight at him, missing some of the windshield, one fender painted a different color, and a lady leaned her head out and shouted at him as she veered, "Pig!" "Well, the same to you, lady," he thought, but did not say. And then he rounded the curve, and there was the pig. Anyway, Martha writes in, "Mike, why eat dinner with a loser? You know, the Hillary Clinton thing, when you can hang out backstage with a rock star." Here's the letter Martha got. "Martha, Barack likes to tell a story." This is from Michelle Obama. "Martha, Barack likes to tell a story about the two of us standing backstage before his speech at the 2004 Democratic Convention. The way he tells it, he was too busy in the days before the convention to feel any pressure. But about an hour before the speech, I could tell he was getting a little nervous. To break the tension, right before he went out on stage, I leaned close and said, 'Just don't screw it up, buddy.' We laughed, and then Barack brought the house down. Well, this year, the house is going to be a lot bigger. More than 75,000 people will be in Denver to be part of this important moment. And I want to tell you about an opportunity to join Barack backstage before his acceptance speech. 10 supporters who make a donation in any amount by midnight this Thursday, July 31st, will be selected to fly to Denver, spend a couple of nights in a hotel, participate in the convention, and go backstage with Barack. Each supporter who is selected will also get to bring a guest along to share the experience. Make a contribution of $5 or more today, and you can have your own backstage with Barack story to tell. Barack's speech at the convention will be a culmination of the unlikely journey that has brought all of us so far over the past 17 months. Seeing it in person will be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I'm excited about being there, and if you make a donation of $5 or more before the deadline, you could join Barack backstage. Thanks for everything you've done to help get us here, Michelle. And now, Johnny Olson, tell our lucky winners what they've won. Well, let me see.
I think we ought to hold a Hillary telethon, a Hillary-a-thon. You know, first in a series, and then maybe we can hold one for Cindy McCain and buy her a new robot head. I mean, you know, something for the millionaire women in society who just need a buck from the common man.
It's astonishing, but you know, we did the same thing. Nova M did the same thing, didn't we? Oh, no, we did, they didn't have to. Yeah, sign up.
But we gave away money. We gave away $10,000.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
People bought a product, and we gave away $10,000. Plus, you know, last time I checked our bank account, we don't have millions of dollars. I don't think we have millions of dollars, unless you're holding out.
No, not me. I just work here. But, no, I guess you're right. What we ask people to do is to become founding members, and everybody's name went in the hand. A guy from San Diego won the 10 grand, right?
We give away money.
we don't
have very much.
I have a message here from Argentina. This is from Hernan. And his last name, Buenos Aires, Argentina, who writes, Mike, I'm a huge fan from Argentina, very interested in politics and the actual situation in the U.S., especially with the Bush crime family in office. I follow almost every day the media bias that's reigning in your country, and I found various similarities with my country. When the Falkland Islands War was developing in 1982, we had a network station here, such as Fox News there, that was always saying in big letters, "We are winning!" In fact, we were not. We were losing. Big. I love your show. In fact, here in Buenos Aires, it starts at midnight, but I hear it anyway. I love your ways, the insightful remarks, and the description of some, quote, wasted DNA, end quote, people that you can find nowadays on the airwaves, such as Limbaugh, Michael Reagan, and others. To any country, I think it is very good to have voices of reason like you. O'Reilly would call it far-left loons that can show people the other side of the mirror. Mike, today at midnight, I will be listening to your show from this part of the world as always. This is my second mail to you. Please, 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 if you can, read it on the air, or at least if you find the time, answer it. Regards, Hernan, Buenos Aires, Argentina. And the bottom it says, esta información es prohibida y confidencial y esta dirigida únicamente a su destinata. Okay, well, there you go, Hernan. All for you, bro. The Political Base, which is a really good blog site, has something up today, and Crooks and Liars picked it up almost exactly 20 years ago, in the middle of the savings and loan crisis. Do you remember that? Huh? Federal regulators seized Lincoln Savings and Loan Association of Irvine, California. The takeover took place more than a year after five United States senators had tried to hold off a government investigation by the Federal Home Loan Bank Board into Lincoln's risky loan practices regarding home loans. Those five senators included John McCain, and the chairman of Lincoln was Charles Keating, who was not only a top McCain donor, but also was Cindy McCain's business partner in a real estate deal in Arizona. Now, the scandal, which the press immediately dubbed the Keating Five, remains or should remain as an albatross for McCain's political career. As a result of Lincoln's collapse, American taxpayers lost more than $2 billion on the bailout. This is just on the one bank. And more than 21,000 mostly elderly investors lost their life savings as a result of bankruptcy of Lincoln's parent company. Well, 20 years later, we're back in the middle of another banking crisis, and federal regulators have already begun seizing insolvent banks. And this advisory ran on the wires over the weekend. Here it is, quote, Silver State Bancorp, the NASDAQ abbreviation is SSBX, the holding company for Silver State Bank, announced today that Andrew K. McCain submitted his resignation today as a director on the boards of directors of Silver State Bancorp and Silver State Bank, citing personal reasons. Mr. McCain previously served as the director of Choice Bank in Scottsdale, Arizona, from 2006 to April 1, 2008, when Choice Bank merged into Silver State Bank. Mr. McCain had been appointed to the boards of the company and Silver State Bank in February 2008 and had served on the bank's audit committee. Andrew McCain is none other than the son of John McCain. Really? Is this one of those stories now that I'm going to have to come back on the air, or come back in about 15 minutes and say, oh, well, wait a minute. Looks like I made a mistake. No, I don't think so. Political Base, blog site is solid, and Crooks and Liars, also. So there you go. Silver State Bancorp, the holding company for Silver State Bank, has announced that another McCain is involved in something. Who knows? Maybe it's something nice. Huh? Maybe the bank is going to declare a huge dividend. And then, of course, the other story today of Republican theft, criminality, and chicanery is about Senator Ted Stevens, who's been indicted on how many? Six or seven counts of federal corruption charges, fraud, lying to people. This guy is 84 years old. A, can he physically withstand a trial? B, if he's found guilty, what are they going to do, lock him up for life? What will that be, a week? The charges are related to the way he leaned hard on people in Alaska to renovate his home and get money. And the charges arise from an investigation that's been underway for more than a year. It says the indictment will surely reverberate through the November elections. Mr. Stevens, who has been in the Senate for 40 years, is up for re-election. Jesus Christ. Mark Begich, a popular Democratic mayor of Anchorage, hopes to supplant him. This is what the New York Times says, supplant him? Supplant him? And if you saw the little press news conference today, the Justice Department dude stood there and pretty much said he wasn't going to answer anything, but he did answer a few questions. Now, he's Stevens is the longest-serving Republican senator in what, the history of the world or just the history of the Senate? I don't know. He grew up in Indiana, California, moved to Alaska before Alaska was a state. Senator Stevens, the guy, you remember him, he got the money for the infamous Bridge to Nowhere. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I can feel it.
So, open the door.
truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Hey, have you? Are you aware of Richard Pearl's new job? You remember Richard Pearl, one of the people that set up the phony war with Iraq that has so far taken the lives of hundreds of thousands of people, including 4,100, or is it approaching 4,200 American soldiers? Now, Richard Pearl, who never served a day in anything, but loves to see other people go kill. Especially if this rat son of a bitch can figure out a way to make money on it. Well, Richard Pearl has figured out a way. He's going to turn a profit from the invasion and the occupation and the death in Iraq. According to the Wall Street Journal, no less, Pearl has been exploring going into the oil business in Iraq, according to people with knowledge of the matter and documents outlining possible deals. The Wall Street Journal says Richard Pearl, one of a group of security experts who began pushing the case for toppling Saddam Hussein about a decade ago, has been discussing a possible deal with officials of Northern Iraq's Kurdistan regional government. The deal would involve a tract near the Kurdish city of Erbil, according to documents describing the plan. A consortium founded by a Turkish company is seeking rights to drill there. The chief executive of the Turkish company, who, like Mr. Pearl, has been involved with the American Turkish Council, an advocacy group in Washington. Richard Pearl's been involved with the American Turkish Council. She wouldn't respond to requests for comment. But her press geek in the U.S. said she herself, the Turkish person, was aware of the drilling plan, but referred questions about it to Mr. Pearl. The American spokes geek said Richard would know the most. He is involved. I know that. Anyway, this goes on and on. Pearl said by email that these people are friends of his with whom he once spent a night at his vacation home in France. Oh, my God. I'll tell you what. We'll have this posted at Malloy.com when the program's over tonight. But... If not a written law, shouldn't there be some moral imperative that says this kind of war profiteering is nothing more than a fast track to the deepest bowels of whatever hell Richard Pearl believes in? Wouldn't you think? I mean, after all that has happened in Iraq and the reverberations of that have spread clear across not just the Middle East, but the entire planet now. Israel is ready to attack Iran. Iran is giving its middle finger to the rest of the world, and in a sense, rightly so. Afghanistan is even more of a failed narco state. Pakistan is on the verge of utter chaos. And once Pakistan goes, say goodbye to India. And Richard Pearl, one of the chief architects of this chaos, this wholesale slaughter, this geopolitical meltdown, it is ready to get his filthy, gnarly hands on Iraq's oil and go into business there. Jesus, God, how do they do that? How do people do that? Anybody know? I know that greed corrupts and absolute greed corrupts absolutely. But this, how do you stand on the corpses of people? How do you do that? How do you stand on the dead bodies of children, civilians, old people, soldiers, American young people? How do you stand? I mean, don't your shoes slip and slide standing on these corpses? Doesn't Richard Pearl get a little nauseous standing there with the stench of death all around him as he works with his Russian and Turkish and Kurdish business partners to go into business in Kurdistan, northern Iraq, to suck up oil. I mean, isn't there some kind of hell, either in this world or whatever Pearl believes to be the next world, that just is yawning open, this open maw waiting for this guy? And if any of that's true, doesn't he feel the hot breath of whatever demon he believes in breathing down his neck because of this? Had I been Richard Pearl and set this up and then had the curtain pulled back to reveal what a lying, murderous son of a bitch I was, I think I would have turned and ran as fast as I could away from anything concerning Iraq, anything with the stench of mega death and butchered people that I was directly responsible for. I would run. I would run. I would run to, I don't know, maybe where? Maybe into the Himalayas. Maybe up into some little forgotten corner and hide out in a Buddhist monastery and beg the monks to pray for me and ring bells and burn incense for decades just to attempt to purify my rotten, corrupted, blackened, filthy soul. But apparently not Richard Pearl. My God. We'll be back, maybe, I don't know. With this story, I may just walk out the back door here and head off into the foothills. Is my 30 caliber down here, Kathy? Is my 30-06 down here? Is there anything moving around out there tonight? Do you hear any noise out there in the brush? I feel like I got to go kill something.
I think Hillary dropped a quarter.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. It's about 7 past the hour. The Malloy program here on Nova M Radio. John in Vancouver, British Columbia, sent me a link to a story. It was in The Guardian of the UK in November of 2003 regarding a speech given by Richard Pearl the evening before, when Richard Pearl conceded that the invasion of Iraq had been illegal. Pearl told an audience in London, which was, you know, entirely different from what the Bush, other Bush crime family members were saying. Pearl told an audience in London, quote, "I think in this case, international law stood in the way of doing the right thing," end quote. What Pearl calls the right thing was the invasion and murder, the invasion of Iraq, occupation of Iraq, and the murder of tens of thousands of innocent civilians. And he said to the audience, "I think in this case, international law stood in the way of doing the so-called right thing." Bush, of course, as pointed out in this article from 5 years ago, consistently argued the war was legal, either because of existing UN Security Council resolutions on Iraq, or as an act of self-defense against what? Throwing sand at us, George? Kicking sand in our faces? Pearl, who, if you remember, was a key member of something called the Defense Policy Board. This was a group of neocon thugs that advised this dumb bastard Rumsfeld and anyone else who had listened about how to, you know, how to get the most out of your military-industrial complex. Anyway, Pearl said that in this speech, quote, international law would have required us to leave Saddam Hussein alone, end quote. But he went on to say that that would have been a morally unacceptable conclusion. Well, sure, you know, if the law gets in your way, screw the law. Stomp on it. Tear it up. Trample it. Butcher it. Kick it to the curb. Law schmaw. And, of course, Pearl had been arguing for this since the end of the first Gulf War way back in 1991. A spokeswoman for the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, who heard this speech 5 years ago, said they're just not interested in international law, are they? It's only when the law suits them that they want to use it. Yeah. Pearl represents everything that is degenerate and dark and criminal in the human psyche. What part of the psyche is that, Kathy? Is that the id? Is that the part that is constantly looking to go back to the old ways of cannibalism and murder and mayhem and having sex with your offspring? And that's to me what Pearl is. I've seen pictures of him, and like Cheney, so like so many of these neocons, the full range of their facial expressions runs from a sneer to a snarl. That's all they're capable of. I don't think they're human. But Richard Pearl wants to get rich. Why? Richie, yo, you know, you're mortal. You really are. You are not a master of the universe. Your ass is going to die. Why do you want to get rich? Why does anybody want to get rich? What's the deal? What's the deal? Ann Coulter, a quote from her address to one of the CPACs, the Conservative Political Action Conference. Sharon writes, in the man shooting up the Unitarian Church reminded me of this quote from Ann Coulter. This is what she said to CPAC a couple of years ago. Quote, when contemplating college liberals, you really regret, once again, that John Walker Lynn is not getting the death penalty. We need to execute people like John Walker Lynn in order to physically intimidate liberals by making them realize that they can be killed too. Otherwise, it would turn out to be outright traitors. End quote. You know, John Walker Lynn, the so-called American Taliban, who is now serving a life sentence, I believe, somewhere. Where, in California, maybe? So Ann Coulter, along with Michael Savage, and so many of these people who are treated as media superstars by, well the media, advocating over the past 5, 6, 7, 10, 15 years, the murder, the butchery of people because their political views or their moral views are those of the only moral point of view left in this country, and that's liberals. And Ann Coulter saying, we need to execute people like Lynn in order to physically intimidate liberals by making them realize that they can be killed too. Nice stuff, huh? I hate to mention Ann Coulter's name because it's almost like an incantation. If somebody says her name, she may pop up again out of whatever cauldron of owl piss that she resides in. It's 12 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls here real quick. Don is calling from Kansas City, listening on Sirius. Hey, Don.
Hey, little Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. That Ted Stevens thing, there was a few months back, maybe even a year ago, that his son has already plea bargained to his involvement, and there's been quite a few other Republicans that have been arrested and charged with crimes that all are involved with this Ted Stevens deal. I mean, there's like 20-some Alaskans that are facing time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember hearing about it. I didn't pay too much attention to it because, you know, it's one of those stories when I read it, I think, oh, yeah, that's Alaska. Okay, that doesn't really affect me. But the truth is, Ted Stevens has exercised an incredible amount of power in the United States Senate. And it turns out that, I realize he's only been indicted, but it turns out that he's just another filthy Republican criminal. But I repeat myself. So, yeah, thanks for pointing that out.
No problem. And also the guy that's running against him, because he was up for re-election, is the mayor of Anchorage, Alaska. And he was already ahead of him by 6 points, 50 to 44, you know, for the overall vote up there. So maybe there, if people are opening their eyes up there and seeing the corruption that that party has.
Maybe there's hope for the country. I hear you. All right. Thanks, Don.
All
right. Appreciate you checking in. Steve is calling from Front Royal, Virginia. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. Great show. Enjoying it tonight.
Well, thank you.
I was calling because I wanted to, every once a year, it's the Sunday after Memorial or before Memorial Day, there's something called Rolling Thunder. And like hundreds of thousands of veterans.
Right.
I've been boycotting it for the past 2 years, but I rode in it and rode in the parade since 1992. And what I heard this year, you know, I've been boycotting it for a couple different reasons, but this year, the leader of it, named Artie Muller, made Chuckle Nuts official or an official member of Rolling Thunder.
Now, Rolling Thunder, for people who don't know, it's Vietnam vets. Who most of whom, I guess, drive Harley Davidsons and
yes.
get together to commemorate either other veterans or their own time, although most of these guys are getting up there in years now, right, Steve?
I agree, and I'm only 42, and I've never served. However, I want to tell you, my dad did serve 22 years in the Air Force. I respect him. I love him. He's a great vet, kind of like maybe Jesse Ventura, but not as I don't know, controversial, but...
But why would George Bush be made an honorary member?
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
I guess I'm putting this together one way, Mike, and you can straighten me out on it, or you can tell me if you agree or not. But it seems to me it's not just the Vietnam vets. It's Gulf War vets that are coming out to this thing. It's all kinds of vets, and even Korea, okay?
Right.
Old Korean War vet on a trike, all right? So... I guess what I want to know from you is this. What do you think about, I guess the point is these people are nuts, okay? This Artie Muller is obviously an idiot and a scumbag. He's got to be. But why are these people like this, and what do you think of Jesse Ventura? I mean, I heard him on a couple radio shows today saying some controversial things, 9/11 being one of them, a bunch of other stuff. I agreed with him. He's a good vet like my dad, but I think at some point, you know, this Rolling Thunder is hundreds of thousands of vets and bikers,
mm-hmm.
and at some point I think that we're going to have to maybe acknowledge that not all these people who are, quote, fighting for our freedom or fighting for what you say is a lie, and it is, I mean, both in Vietnam and if it ever was true, it hadn't been true in Vietnam and it hadn't been true in the past two wars. And I guess what I want to know from you is, you know, it seems to me that they're not all saints and they're not all great. A lot of them are scumbags and they are messed up and they're blindly following Bush. And I don't know where it comes from, but there are those that are not like that. And I just wanted to get your take on Ventura and the different types of vets that we've got. And I know it's off topic, but I've heard you talk about the soldiers.
All right. Let me do this break, Steve. You're listening on Sirius Satellite Radio, so we'll let me do the break. We come back, and I'll take a shot at this. Thanks, pal. Appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
You must be living. Go now, you are forgiven. But the men stood fast with their guns on their shoulders, not knowing what to do with the contradicting orders. The general said he would do his own duty, but he would extend it no further. The men could go as they pleased, but not a man moved. Their eyes gazed straight ahead, till one by one they stepped back, and not a word was said. And they boom, boom, bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk and you talk that talk.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Boom, 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 boom.
bang, bang. 22 past the hour.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
I think it was Steve. It was Steve who asked the question. First of all, Rolling Thunder. You know, Vietnam vets now are the youngest ones. If they served in combat in Vietnam, they're in their mid-50s. The youngest, I think. There are a lot of Vietnam vets who are in their 60s and approaching 70. The further you get removed from a war, of course, the more the violence recedes, and I'm not talking about the post-traumatic stress disorder. I don't think that ever leaves. I'm not talking about the bad dreams. I think they'll always be there. But conscious memory starts to change. You know, the camaraderie, the mission, all of that starts to take the place of figuring out how to frag the lieutenant who wants you to go out on patrol, and you know you're all going to die if you do that. That sort of thing, and the blood and the guts and the gore and the blown-up children and the dead women and people being executed in ditches and hearts and minds, all that stuff starts to fade, and all of a sudden it becomes a huge motorcycle ride where you can wear an American flag patch on your shoulder and a tight black T-shirt over your enormous beer-choked gut and ride around the country with American flags and declare your patriotism, which when in fact what you're declaring is your incipient fascism. It's the whole Rolling Thunder thing. First of all, just taking the name away from the artist to whom it really belongs, it takes an awful lot of guts, wouldn't you think? But anyway, riding those big hogs and cruising around the United States, going hither and yon, declaring yourself, oh, I'm a Vietnam vet. Part of that, I think, comes from the fact that if you're a Vietnam vet, you also... And I don't mean this in a disrespectful way. It's got to be true. You're also partly insane. And the reason you're partly insane is this. There's a wall built by Mile End in D.C. with the names of almost 59,000 dead Americans. Dead Americans. This has nothing to do with the wounded, mentally and physically wounded. And those dead Americans' names just sit on that wall. While meantime, Jerry Springer... and one of the Spice Girls goes to what used to be called Saigon and holds a Miss Universe contest. And it's beamed around the world and picked up here in the United States. You know, that has to make people who fought in that illegal war another example of U.S. aggression and imperialism. I don't give a damn how you try to justify it. That's what it was. And we got our asses kicked severely, severely by the Vietnamese people. But if you're a Vietnam vet and you see that, or you know what's going on, or you know that Vietnam, in terms of factories, is becoming the new China. You know, first it was Mexico, our jobs went there, and then the Chinese said we can do it cheaper, and the jobs went there, and then the Vietnamese said, well, by Christ, we can do it cheaper than that, so the jobs are there now. And when you have someone like Colin Powell, a couple of years ago, putting on coconuts, coconut breasts, and a funny paint, and a grass skirt, and dancing around a stage in Hanoi, for Christ's sake, doing a variety show, for the entertainment of the North Vietnamese, which is what Colin Powell used to call them, the North Vietnamese, who stomped his ass and stomped the ass of the American war machine, just stomped it into the ground. And they did it on bicycles and with not very sophisticated weapons. It didn't make any difference if some thug like John McCain flew over their cities and bombed their wives and children and husbands and grandfathers and grandmothers. It didn't make any difference. The Vietnamese sacrificed over 2 million civilian dead and combat dead against our 58,000, 59,000 combat dead, but they stomped us into the ground, as they should have, because we were the aggressor. Jesse Ventura, politically, you know, he's an intriguing guy. I always found him entertaining, and I don't mean that in a condescending way. I mean entertaining. And also, on some of his political ideas, he was pretty pretty much on the spot, wouldn't you think? On the money. Hope that answers it for you, Steve. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M.
There was nobody home. I was stunned and amazed. My childhood memories so swirled past like the wind through the trees. Hey, oh.
Proof that fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Okay. Ben writes in, hey, Mike, can you please say Wolf Blitzer on the air? My wife doesn't believe me when I tell her how funny it is. You're talking about the former German U-boat commander, Wolf Blitzer. Wolf Blitzer, is that what you mean, Ben? Okay. All right, once again, it's time for A Moment with Bob. Once again, from our correspondent in the far northwest, Bob. Bob writes, hey, Mike, last February, Fox News edited one word out of a video of Michelle Obama's speech. That edit made it seem that she meant something other than what she actually said. The nuance was changed. Then the right-wing wacky sphere, Bill O'Reilly, Dennis Miller, Sean Hannity, and their clones, beat her over the head with the club Fox News just made for them. They said she was, quote, un-American, and O'Reilly got to say the word lynch. I called three journalism professors at the University of Washington and an anchor at a network affiliate station here in Seattle and asked them what would happen in the newsroom or the classroom if anyone edited a quote to change its meaning. They responded, changing that one word drastically alters the meaning. It's an ethical violation, obviously not a mistake. I teach my students to never alter quotes. If I found out about it, I'd flunk them. I've never worked anywhere where that is acceptable. There would be severe consequences. In the newsroom, I'd outright can his or her ass. Those were the comments. But they all prefaced their remarks with variations of, oh, that's just Fox. What do you expect? In the same dismissive tone of voice you'd use saying, oh, well, boys will be boys when describing the zany antics of guys in a fraternity house. Media Matters reported earlier this month the following. On the July 2nd edition of Fox News' Fox and Friends, co-host Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade labeled New York Times reporter Jacques Steinberg and editor Stephen Redcliffe labeled them attack dogs, claiming that Steinberg's June 28 article on the, quote, ominous trend, end quote, in Fox News ratings was a hit piece. During the segment, however, Fox News featured photos of Steinberg and Redcliffe that appeared to have been digitally altered. Steinberg's teeth were yellowed, his nose and chin widened, and his ears made to protrude further. Redcliffe's teeth had been yellowed, dark circles had been added under his eyes, and his hairline had been moved back. Crooks and Liars reported the following. Neither Steinberg nor Redcliffe were reachable for comment, but Times culture editor Sam Siftam called the Fox photo work disgusting, and the criticism of the paper's reporting, quote, a specious and meritless claim, end quote. It wasn't a hit piece, Siftam told editor and publisher. It was straight news. This was a hit piece by Fox News. It is beneath comment, end quote. Asked if the paper planned to respond to Fox's actions, he said no. Quote, it is fighting with a pig. Everyone gets dirty, and the pig likes it, end quote. So, Mike, this is what drives me crazy. Fox puts out doctored photographs of New York Times reporters. They're just like the cartoon caricatures of Jews that Goebbels and the Nazis distributed all over Germany in the 30s. But instead of slamming Fox, the New York Times lets them slide. But Fox gives a positive warp to the news when covering John McCain. Last Friday, Fox reported on a campaign stop John McCain made in Ohio. But instead of playing video from that event, they used an 8-year-old video clip from the 2000 primary campaign. John McCain will be 72 this August. In the video Fox played, he was 64. Just more madcap clowning around from those cut-ups at Fox News. And let's not forget George W. Bush's cousin, John Ellis, that wild and crazy guy at Fox who called the floor to vote for Bush on election night 2000. Fox might be broadcasting's bad boy, but they're not fooling around. They play for keeps, and they've changed history. From ProjectCensored.org, quote, in February 2003, a Florida Court of Appeals unanimously agreed with an assertion by Fox News that there is no rule against distorting or falsifying the news in the United States. The Florida Appeals Court claimed that the FCC policy against falsification of the news does not rise to the level of, quote, law, rule, or regulation, end quote. It was simply a policy. Therefore, it is up to the station whether or not it wants to report honestly. But Mike, was Fox alone in wanting to preserve their right to lie to the American public? Quote, what is more appalling are the five major media outlets that filed briefs of amici curiae, or friend of the court, for Fox to support Fox's position on lying. They were the Bellow Corporation, Cox Television Incorporated, Gannett Company Incorporated, Media General Operations Incorporated, and Post Newsweek Stations Incorporated. But we can fight back, Mike, right? There are many internet sites that track the lies and distortions that spew from the mainstream media, right? Media Matters, Project Censored, Center for Public Integrity, Crooks and Liars, Democracy Now!, TV News Lies, and who cares? The guy that just sent me another forwarded ad nauseum email filled with right-wing Republican hate-filled drivel isn't the sort of person who gallops off to Snopes.com to fact-check the propaganda. Since the Fairness Doctrine was axed, there hasn't been a mainstream venue to refute the lies of the right-wing noise machine. For those who care, well, there's the internet and sane talk radio, but the sad fact is that the majority of Americans don't care enough to find out if the news that comes out of their TV, radio, or newspaper is really news at all. And if they're not aware of that sordid little court ruling in Florida, how would they know if they should even question it? CBS isn't going to tell anybody. They edited the latest McCain interview so he doesn't sound completely crazy. And if you only get your news from CBS, you're just like all of us mushrooms, kept in the dark and fed manure. We're all in the same boat. Got to get to work, got to keep the job, got to pay the bills. Jesus Christ, my house isn't worth what I paid for it. Price of gas, price of food, price of everything going through the roof. And, well, rinse and repeat. The Nazification of America is happening right before our eyes, and because we're too busy to pay attention, it might as well be just another episode of Hogan's Heroes. So what if 22 Americans and 88 Iraqis got turned into dirt last week? That's over there someplace. We're doing all right as long as you don't look too closely at anything. Things only start to slip a little when someone with a hate-filled head, courtesy of Michael Savage, Limbaugh, Hannity, and Fox, tips over and grabs a shotgun. When the slip turns into a greased slide and builds to an avalanche, that's when the fun will really get started. We've had 20 years of Limbaugh and 12 years of Fox telling the people that liberals ruined this country and are the root cause of what's ailing you. The enemy is within, and you can tell them by their Obama bumper stickers. But if everything's going to turn out, all right, because Obama's going to be the next president and he'll fix everything. So, what's acceptable to mainstream America as engineered by the mainstream media? Through indifference, forced ignorance, or choice, oh, just about anything. Edgar Allan Poe wrote of people protected from the outside world, so they ignored it. Quote, and now is acknowledged the presence of the Red Death.
He had come like a thief in the night, and one by one dropped the revelers in the blood-bedewed halls of their revel, and died each in the despairing posture of his fall. And darkness and decay and the Red Death held illimitable dominion over all. And that's reason number 747 why I don't get invited to parties. Bob. Another Moment with Bob. And if you would like your own copy of tonight's A Moment with Bob, go to MikeMalloy.com when the program's over, and voila, there it is. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. To your phone calls for a moment here. Jeff is calling from Fort McMurray, Canada, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. What is Fort McMurray, Canada? Jeff, is that a town, a city?
That is the city of Fort McMurray. It's probably the fastest growing city in North America. I'm right in the middle of the oil sands.
Oh, okay. Well, then I hope you own some of that sand, because Americans are coming up there to make you wealthy.
Well, I already hear Halliburton is starting to buy up some of the contractors up here.
And, I'll bet. I'll bet they are.
In Alberta, we've lived under conservative rule for, well, I'm not an Albertan originally, but we've lived under conservative rule here for 40 years.
Really?
It's the only place in Canada that you pay for your health care, pay premiums, and that'll be until the end of the year. And I'm originally from the other side of Canada, actually, in Newfoundland.
Wait. What province do you live in?
I live in Alberta.
Alberta.
But I'm a transplant. I'm originally from Newfoundland.
Okay, but what you're saying is the various provinces don't have to follow federal law in Canada where it concerns health care?
We pay what you call Alberta health care premiums.
Okay.
Which offset the cost of health care in Alberta. I think it's something like $200 every so many months or something like that. But you get family plans. I think my wife and I pay $88 a month.
Jeff, I'll tell you what. Hold on a second, because I want to hear what you got to say, and I got you all sidetracked and distracted here talking about health care in Alberta. So stay right there. We'll do the break and come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 8 before the hour. We're talking with Jeff in Fort McMurray, Alberta, Canada. All right. I'm sorry, Jeff, for all the interruptions. Where were you going with your call?
That's fine. In Alberta right now, we're paying a health care premium. I think this is like $88 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's our family plan for now. But at the end of the year, the Alberta government is getting rid of the premium, so our health care will be totally free. Now, I know what you're saying. All provinces are different, and I know where I come from in Newfoundland, we've never paid a premium, ever.
Uh-huh.
I've never paid for health care, stitches, bones, operations, or whatever, right? Just doesn't happen. We don't have that. We buy insurance to come to the States for medical reasons, like medical insurance. I think we're covered up to so much that the American government or the state governments would pay, or our benefits pay the American system so much or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm also I'm a union rep here in Fort McMurray. So, I mean, I've got my own benefit plan and my mm-hmm. own pension. So I don't worry about prescriptions. I pay like $3 for a prescription or something.
Right.
And, like, we're right up in the oil sands, and which is probably the largest oil reserve in the world right now. I don't know if you know much about it or not.
Well, I know it's going to be a little difficult to extract. This is not like just drilling and hitting a pool of oil. There's an industrial process that this stuff has to go through. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the chemical byproducts of the extraction process are really, really, really toxic.
Yeah, I just came from Syncrude. I'm just on my way back to town from Syncrude Energy. And you can see apartment-sized sulfur blocks.
Mm.
Big yellow blocks of sulfur that have been there for years. We produce a lot of coke that's in the steel making.
Right.
We don't transport a lot of it anymore. We used to send it to Japan, but now it's just piled up in mountains now. We have two-headed fish up here as well.
Oh, my God.
and downstream, down the Athabasca, now there's a lot of cases of cancer in Fort Chippewa, which is a native reserve about mm-hmm. 300 kilometers north. Mm-hmm. You can only get there by winter road or plane. And now they've got like a very high concentration of cancer up there.
Oh, Jesus.
So it's an interesting, there's a lot of money here. It's we make about $120,000 a year. That's without an education. For the most part, $35 an hour plus overtime. Alberta also, on the labor end of it, Alberta is also the only place, I believe, in Canada that the government would encourage a company to start another company so they could get away from their own unions. So that's kind of a battle.
You've certainly got your work cut out for you if you're a union rep or a union organizer.
I'm a business agent for the operating engineers.
Oh, okay.
Which is an international union. You guys are down there too.
Right, right.
About 400,000 members.
What is to stop entrepreneurs in Canada from stepping away from carbon-based fuel and going to work for alternative fuels, solar, geothermal, wind? I'm just on and on. What is there interest in that?
Yes, I believe you can apply for grants through the government to get involved or to start research or start up some things in solar. I hear you guys crying about $4 a gallon.
Right.
To me, that's like 80 cents a liter. I mean, we're paying $1.36 a liter I spent today. $1.36.9 a liter, which is about $5.25.
But the big difference, though, in gasoline in Canada and Europe and the rest of the world is that while you all may be paying the equivalent anywhere from $6 to $8 or $9 a gallon, that's what fuels so many of your social programs here.
Yeah.
You know, it's taxes. Here it's not taxes. Here it's just simple oil speculation and profit for the oil companies.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, so there's go ahead.
For you guys like to drill in Anwar or off the Pacific Rim, I mean you're taking on like billions of dollars in infrastructure. It's not going to be online for another. You can get an oil platform built and out in production with a pipeline in less than 8 years. I wouldn't.
No, you're absolutely right, and that's the trick, Jeff. That the trick bag the American public is being put into. And secondly, drilling in Anwar, if it comes online and is fully producing, it might reduce the cost of gasoline by a nickel a gallon. Jeff, I got to leave it there. I hope you call again. A lot of things we could talk about. I just have to leave it there right now. Thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. It's 7 past the hour. Mike Malloy here on the Novam Radio Network. One more thing I want to drop in the mix here, and then we're going to take phone calls, I believe, for the rest of the program, unless something big comes up like, oh, I don't know, what, earthquake in California, maybe? The Environmental Protection Agency, don't you love that name? Environmental Protection Agency. Environment. It's there to protect the environment, or is it? It's a protection racket agency, kind of like Limbaugh and the rest of these thugs in corporate America. A protection, environmental protection. Well, it started out as an organization designed, a bureaucracy designed, to make sure that the air and the soil and the water and was drinkable or on which we could live or it was breathable. You know, kind of one of those necessary watchdog organizations that have such a place where it concerns capitalism. If the watchdog is gone, the people's eyes, that's what these organizations or agencies or bureaus are supposed to do. They're supposed to be the people's eyes. If the people's eyes are diverted or closed or poked out, then unbridled predatory capitalism emerges and game over. And that is one of the reasons that we have tomatoes, or was it hot peppers, or was it lettuce, that is full of pathogens. Because agencies like the EPA or the Food and Drug Administration, or just go right down the list, have all been rendered or been neutered by the Bush crime family in response to demands from corporate America. Check our tomatoes. What are you out of your mind? Make sure our beef doesn't have mad cow pathogens. What? Are you crazy? Get out of here. Get out of town. What? What do you think you are? Upton Sinclair? Go away. Go away. Well, the latest, not the latest, just another in a series of these agencies being gutted, destroyed, ruined, incapacitated, and taken over by Bush crime family shills, pigs, thugs, liars, deceivers, incompetence, is the EPA. It has told its staff not to answer questions from the agency, from the Environmental Protection Agency's internal watchdog. What? You didn't know they had one? Oh, yeah. That was part of the setup, the schema. The idea was to have this agency that oversaw the protection of the environment, but knowing full well that we live in a capitalist society, and capitalism, left alone, is predatory. It devours families. It eats people alive. It destroys everything in its path. Knowing that, some genius decided, well, these agencies have also got to have an internal watchdog, because you never know. Maybe somebody at the top of the EPA or the FDA or the ICC or the FCC or the XYZ will be approached and corrupted. So let's have an internal watchdog. Well, the EPA has one. But the Environmental Protection Agency head, the top people, have told members of the EPA, functionaries, bureaucrats, workers, if the watchdog guy comes around, don't talk to him. But worse of it, shut up. Don't. But it says here, I'm supposed. Do you want to lose your job? No. Then shut up. Now, all this is a result of an internal memo that an environmental group released yesterday. This memo was written June 16th, and it's to the staff of the EPA's enforcement division. Right? Those are the people who are supposed to make sure that corporate America doesn't destroy every goddamn thing it touches. The enforcement division. You have two-headed frogs because you have tailings from a sulfur plant or whatever spewing into the water. Well, you can't do that. You have all sorts of diseases and filth because you've got a hog slaughtering plant and you're dumping all the offal right into the water. Well, we can't have that. That's what the enforcement division, among other things, is supposed to do. But the enforcement division was told by people up the food chain, don't talk to the internal watchdog if you're contacted. The internal watchdog at the EPA is the Inspector General's office. And the sole function of the EPA Inspector General's office is to monitor the agency, to make sure that, you know, something untoward doesn't occur. So all this turned up in a memo that the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility got their hands on and released to reporters. A spokesman for the EPA, one Roxanne Smith, said that the policy of not talking with the environmental watchdog, the internal watchdog, that policy was consistent with existing policies and intended to coordinate responses. Yeah, you know, the EPA can't have people walking around drifting off the reservation, so to speak, saying, well, this part's corrupted, this part's polluted, this part we've altered all the numbers, this part we were told that Jesus is coming back, so ignore that. This part, no. Don't cooperate with the internal investigator because we are trying to coordinate our responses. Now, if you're a regular listener to the program here and do your own research to hell with this program, if you do your own research, you know that the Bush crime family has destroyed every single regulatory agencies out there, and that the right wing in this country, especially the right wing radio jackasses, have done such a wonderful job of convincing people that these regulatory agencies only are all involved in unnecessary regulation. That's all. They just want to take our jobs away. That's the story that the right-wing lie machine has put out there with such effectiveness. I've often wondered, why doesn't the left have a truth squad that, well, you know the answer. Of course we have truth squads. We have more truth squads than the right-wing has these flying lie machines. But the difference is the right-wing also owns media. And if you have discovered an absolute cure for Alzheimer's and no one will listen to you or publicize your cure, no one, well, guess what? So, a former EPA air pollution attorney said the Inspector General's office ordinarily has unfettered access to any employee at the EPA so they can speak candidly and anonymously. If you have a problem, that's what the inspector, internal inspector, is all about. Sit down with him or her, tell the inspector, tell the internal watchdog what's going on, but not in the age of Bush. Why? Because in the age of Bush, Cheney has instructed Bush, who has instructed all the department heads, no, it's a new game. We don't give a filthy damn what happens outside the walls of the corporate factory. We don't care how much offal and garbage and poison is dropped into the environment. We couldn't care less. We really couldn't. Because that's all environmental wacko nonsense anyway. That's what Rush says it is, so it must be true. So what happens to you and me and our kids and our grandpappies and grandmamas, what happens? What happens to our families? How often do we get sick? How many of us die? How badly are they destroying everything they touch? How about 100%? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Maybe some suggestions, and I bet they're gonna ask me about man's insanity.
You got a real nice planet here, but you better watch your atmosphere. And you better clean your water enough, or have none for your cup. You got a real nice planet here,
nice planet.
But you better watch your atmosphere.
Yeah, nice.
And you better clean your water enough.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. So just back to this, EPA tells its staff, don't answer the internal investigators' questions. Don't pay any attention to representative of the people. EPA is supposed to be representative of the people against corporate America and its filthy polluting habits. But again, most brain-dead Americans have been convinced that regulations do nothing but drive jobs overseas. No, it's not regulations that drive jobs overseas. It is the fact that the people who run the corporations don't give a tinker's damn about America, about our tax structure, about our workers, about our health care. Nothing, absolutely nothing. They are corporate masters of the universe, and everything is expendable. Resources, air, water, your life, your unborn child, sperm that floats around inside your testes if you're a man, it's all expendable. It can all be broken. The DNA can be fractured. The genetic material can be rendered inoperable if that's what it takes for the corporations to continue to make their profits. Hello. Anyway, this memo appeared as the Senate Environmental and Judiciary Committees are trying to get EPA to release information about its global warming policies. Now, remember, there was a Supreme Court ruling that said, I forget the specific ruling, but said that the EPA, had an obligation under the law to provide information about global warming. Now, global warming, of course, is a big no-no. It doesn't make any difference what the op-eds on the New York Times editorial page or the Washington Post editorial page say, the op-eds from predators like ExxonMobil. Oh, we're working to preserve good air because we breathe. No, that's garbage and hog snot. None of that. Nothing. There is not a single effort being made by corporate America to reverse what it has brought to us in terms of environmental degradation. Nothing. Senator Patrick Leahy, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Senate Judiciary Committee, said last week that he was instructing the EPA Inspector General's office to go ahead and investigate, find out if there's any wrongdoing in failing to cooperate with Congress. Now, isn't that just a typical Democratic senator doddering old farts a reaction?
Well, here, I want you to go see if their law breaking really is breaking the law. Well, and write me a report. Get me a report up here, and I'll have my staff read it, because I'm so goddamn old, I can't read anything. I can't even see, the end of my cane. I can't see anything. Did you hear what happened to poor old Ted Stevens today? Son of a bitch.
Yeah. Just thought you might like to know that. I don't know why I thought that. I didn't like to know it when I read it.
The memo here is sent by Robbie Farrell to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 12 EPA people, staff people, and then the three CCs to three more. Subject, please remind staff responding to the GAO, the Inspector General, and the press. Please remind your staff at your next staff meeting of the following policies and procedures. One, if you're contacted by a reporter, please forward the call or email to Laura Gentile or Roxanne Smith and carbon copy Robbie. Please do not respond to questions or make any statements. If you are contacted directly by the Inspector General's office or the General Accountability Office requesting information of any kind, please forward their call or email to Gwen Spriggs and carbon copy Robbie. Please do not respond to questions or make any statements. Thanks very much for your continued attention to these important procedures. Robbie. Robbie is there to thwart the intent of the law, the spirit of the law, the intent of Congress, the law itself. Where do these piggish bastards come from? Do they all come from Regent University? They couldn't. Do they all come from the Christian right or the fascist right? They couldn't, could they? Don't respond. Don't respond to anything. Don't answer anything. No, 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 no. You're not a public agency anymore. You're not there to protect the environment. You're not there to protect anything anymore. Oh, there was a time when that was the pro forma approach that, you know, okay, we're the Environmental Protection Agency. Isn't that a knee slapper? You know what we got to protect. We got to protect corporate America from these goddamn environmental wackos. Isn't that what Rush calls them? Environmental wackos. That's right. That's what they are. They're taking our jobs. That's what they're doing. That's the reason all the jobs went to China, you know. Because of environmental wackos. Yeah.
We are a rock revolving around a golden sun. We are a billion children rolled into one. So when I hear about the hole in the sky, salt water wells in my eyes. We climb the highest mountain, we'll make the desert blue. We're so
Flying Monkey Rights Blues, here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, but I got the Flying Monkey Rights Blues. All right, to your phone calls. Anybody there? Do we have anybody on hold? Oh, we have how many open lines? Oh, my God. The phone number here is 800-989-1480, if you want to join in. If not, just leave me twisting here in the wind. Let's start with Mike, who's calling from San Diego, listening on the Internet. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Wanted to talk to you about your point, you know, a couple weeks ago about them running a protection racket, especially that hillbilly heroin swilling villain and all those chicken hawks that get on the big propaganda box at Fox.
Yeah.
Like Sean Insanity. And you can almost see the wires. I got a buddy of mine. I'm trying to deprogram him. I'm saying, what? Dude, what do you got the Cheney channel on for? You know, that's straight-up propaganda.
Right, right.
It works against you. It's not your interest. And this guy's he's a truck driver in a union. And I said, why do you listen to a child molester like Rush, who, you know, if it's up to him, he'd have you eaten out of a dumpster and kick you to the curb without even a moment's notice. He doesn't have any, you know, human empathy or any kind of feeling for anybody but himself and his, you know, his basically hoggish self-interest, just like, you know, the illustrative of your last few points on capitalism and how it's basically ruining America.
Sure.
You've got working class people that tune into this stuff and get a steady diet of it, and you know, they're just basically mainlining this intellectual junk food, and they don't even have anybody to challenge it. You used to be on the terrestrial airwaves out here in San Diego on KLSD,
mm-hmm.
and that got pulled off the airwaves because Larry Mays, Bush's barbecue buddy, couldn't have a progressive station on out here in San Diego and have a guy like maybe Mike Malloy on.
Oh, God forbid. Somebody may get, a wild hair up his butt and decide that maybe it would be a good thing to preserve San Diego's beaches. Maybe it would be a good thing. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, and it's amazing because, you know, we live in a beautiful region, but it's very, you know, it has a high cost of living, and the wages haven't kept up. That's the one thing you don't hear about when banks are, you know, closing. They say there might be a recession, there might be a depression. I mean, I remember that iconic photograph of the highest standard of living in the world, and then I saw IndyMac closing. People out there in the sweltering heat of Pasadena, poor old ladies keeling over, you know, cops ready to, you know, bust out the pepper spray and batons on them. And then you've got, you know, this whole cadre of loser, lunatic, right-wing dingbats and all of Russia's little imitators, you know, on all this local radio all across this country. And, it's amazing. There is no broadcast alternative to that because the media has become, you know, just a tool for these people. It's seized. You know, he syndicated on how many channels are all, you know, any kind of right-wing kook can get on the airwaves, advocate violence, you know, silencing critics,
mm-hmm.
you know, tamping down dissent, and they can get away with outrageous, insane behavior where you can't even get an alternative point of view on the terrestrial airwaves. You know, basically, those of us that are more progressive or left-thinking, you know, our only territory is the Internet. I think that's a mistake to cede that territory to him, Mike. I think the FCC license is just like you were making the point about the EPA.
Mm-hmm.
The FCC is a fraud, and it's a complete joke on the granting of these airways, these licenses. It's an outrage. The hearings in Seattle, I don't know if you maybe caught some of that.
I did not, no. Uh-uh.
The public was freaking outraged. It was 10-1, and that little worm went and you know, voted to grant the licenses. And apparently Sirius and XM are now merging. So you've got this massive consolidation of the mass media. And just like you said with the protection racket, this massive protection racket that they're running, and I love that Sopranos theme music, Mike. I think that ought to become a regular item on your show. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for keeping the airwaves free, my man.
Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate all you had to say, and thanks for checking in. You make excellent points. Excellent points. You want to hear something really bizarre? Well, maybe I'll let this wait till tomorrow night. We'll see. Sanchez is calling from Montbello, California. Listening on KTLK. Hey, Sanchez.
Hey, very good evening to you, sir.
Hey, back at you.
First of all, thank you for yesterday's All Beach Boys All the Time show. That was rather nice. But I was a little disappointed because I'm still looking forward to one of your old-fashioned oldies but goodies radio programs. When are you going to put one of those together?
Music from the 60s and 70s?
Yeah. Remember, like, the time you were playing George Carlin and you just let My Sweet Lord just sail all the way through? That was great.
That was a long time ago, Sanchez.
Well, that's how long I've been waiting, man.
Yeah? we might do something like that again, but there are some licensing requirements if you play somebody else's music.
Okay, yeah, then you got to pay for it. Yeah.
Yeah, you've heard of BMA or BMI
and
ASCAP.
Yeah, fair usage and all that stuff.
Right,
okay.
Right.
So, all right, well, I suppose I can still dream on
that. And I don't see our flagship station that actually engineers and co-produces this program, even though we're in the North Georgia foothills.
Yeah, KPHX.
Right. Phoenix is. I don't think they are subscribers to ASCAP or BMI, which means, you know, as long as your music runs under a minute, nobody's going to jump up and say, "Pay us our 2 cents."
Oh, okay.
But we have to watch, you know,
okay.
And which is only fair. I mean, you know, writers' royalties are what makes you know, music people wealthy. It's not not the entertainers; it's the writers.
So. Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
You know all that. But
yeah.
Now, the real reason you called
was to tell you. Well, you were mentioning Ted Stevens, Senator Ted Stevens, Alaska's old coot. The guy that brought us the Bridge to Nowhere and a few other scandals in his 40-year career up in Congress in the Senate. And he was indicted today by the Justice Department. Miracle of miracles. I mean, I could not believe this. I mean, Mukasey is what? Was it so obvious that he had to, like, indict him for that?
Well, it could have been, you know, career. Not everybody inside the Justice Department is a right-wing a killer. Some of the people who work there, the career attorneys
mm-hmm.
probably were the ones that pushed this investigation and kept going. And this investigation has been going on for better than a year.
Yeah, no, I've been following this. That and the story of his son, Ben. Ben was the one that actually took the money from Bill Allen, you know, the guy from Vico, the guy that, like, slipped something like, what was it, $250,000? I don't remember what the sum was. But, you know, his son was the one that was charged with all that. And here we've got Ted Stevens indicted. But I was so surprised by it. Mm-hmm. KTLK here in Los Angeles was announcing it during the 11:30 hard break that they do for the news.
Oh, that's right around the time the earthquake hit.
Yes. Well, that's what you jumped the gun because I was thinking, I go, yeah, right, Ted Stevens indicted. The day Ted Stevens is indicted is the day the earth will shake. 8 minutes later, the ground shakes with a 5.4 earthquake here in Southern California. And I'm like, oh, my God, here I go again.
Really,
here I go again something, and it happens. Remember, I was thinking about George Carlin and all that weird stuff?
Uh-huh.
So it happened again because I even reminded myself as I was sitting there in that little eight-minute gap, I'm thinking, oh, I better replace the water that I took out of my earthquake package. Everybody here in California, Southern California, should have an earthquake package. And I pulled the water out of there a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I was saying, I got to replace that water. And boom, the ground starts shaking. I'm thinking, oh, Sanchez, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? Stop thinking about it. So I don't know. I'm sitting here. Tonight I'm thinking about something else, and I'm hoping, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I'm envisioning myself sitting in a hot tub with the very voluptuous Stephanie Miller sitting beside me. Oh, baby.
Oh. Well, you keep dreaming, Sanchez. You know, any philosopher will tell you, if you can dream it, you can possibly make it happen. However, we're concerned, Stephanie, I would say probably not. But it's a good dream. All right?
Okay, man.
All right, Sanchez. Take care. Take care. When I see Stephanie on the 16th in August, I'll have to mention that to her. Are you going? Anybody? You folks in the Seattle area? KPTK is sponsoring this progressive forum. I hope you're going. You can get information at their website, 1090 AM KPTK in Seattle. It's going to be a hoot. Tom Hartman, Sam Cedar, Randy Rhodes, Stephanie Miller, Rachel Maddow, and me, and Ron Reagan will be emceeing or hosting. Six of us and Ron Reagan. It's going to be an absolute hoot. So if you haven't gotten tickets yet, I suggest strongly that you do it. All right. Not quite sure how the evening's going to go, but I'll guarantee it'll be one to remember. KPTK in Seattle doing this. Henry is calling from California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Henry. Oh, wait a minute, Henry.
Hello.
Hold on. Yeah, hold on. I get your call, Henry, and then I got to put you on hold. I'll come back and get you right after the break. Stay with us.
Thank you.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and Catherine Bay, our group of poets, artists, and madmen who put the program together. Thanks to everybody. You know, the 17, 18-second intro to... is that Baba or... what song is that? Oh, that's Teenage Wasteland. The 17, 18 seconds of that funky introduction. You know, back in the day, when we all used to sit around and get stoned, that introduction seemed like it went on for like half an hour.
That was in a Gotta DeVita.
Well, that too, but that... It's just endless. Now, we're about to talk with Henry. All right, Henry, thanks for holding on.
Sure. I was just calling in. I got something in the email from Georgia on a peace discussion. I think it's some people related to Amy Goodman. Anyways, they're raising the question of Afghanistan and asking people to address Afghanistan. And this is something that my cousin was in the World Trade Center. He was on the 70th floor in the second building, the first building to collapse. And he evacuated a lot of people. He got out safely about 10 minutes before it collapsed. But him and me and lots of other people, we weren't really keen on the authorization by Dennis Kucinich and the entire U.S. Congress, except for Barbara Lee, of the invasion and occupation of Afghanistan as a response to September 11, 2001. Mm-hmm. And we still aren't keen on it. And one thing that people didn't really talk about last year was that compared to the surge in Iraq, percentage-wise, the United States budget for Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan was about 200-300% more than the surge in Iraq. And that was last year, according to our government report. And, you know, like, we've seen, like, the last 2 months that more U.S. troops and U.S. ally troops in Afghanistan have died than in Iraq. And now we've got this pro-war candidate, Barack Obama, calling for 10,000 more troops into Afghanistan. And what I'm trying to get to is that we need some... You know, we've needed it for a while, but we need some courage. We need some courage to call a spade. And when I say that, I'm saying that terrorism is wrong no matter who does it. You drop bombs on children in Palestine, you drop bombs on children in Afghanistan, you're going to get a blowback. And we need to stop giving asylum to this guy, Luis Posada Carriles, who many people acknowledge, and he's acknowledged his role in blowing up hotels, killing tourists, blowing up a jet airliner that killed all 73 people aboard, and he's got asylum in Florida. So we've got to stop supporting terrorism.
Well, the thing is, and you've got to consider this, Henry, Posada, the guy you're talking about, 99.9% of out of 100 Americans don't have a clue what you're talking about.
Right.
Terrorism is terrorism. You're absolutely right. The largest perpetrator of terrorism on the planet is the United States. Anyone who disagrees with that is insane or not informed or blind to the truth or what have you. But as far as Obama is concerned, yes, a call to increase troop strength, U.S. troop strength in any area in which we are now involved in a shooting war is insane, is absolutely insane. I wish somebody would please, for God's sake, tell me why we are killing people in Afghanistan and having our soldiers and NATO soldiers killed in Afghanistan. What are we doing there? Are we looking for Osama bin Laden? That is such a joke. Only it's a sick, perverted, I won't even call it a joke. It's an utter, absolute lie. One of the reasons we're in Afghanistan is to make sure that Hamid Karzai, or the next puppet we put in office as the leader of that country, is open to whatever
the American-based oil companies want to do about building a pipeline across Afghanistan. Remember, that's what that's all about. If we were truly interested in tracking down the people responsible for planning the events of September 11, 2001, we would not have sent 30,000 troops. We would not be bombing and killing civilians. We wouldn't be doing any of this. In the first place, if the story's true, all 19 of the perpetrators are, dead. And beyond that, if you want to get the people who planned it, I thought we already did that. Didn't we grab Sheikh Khalid Muhammad? Isn't he the planner? Isn't he the one who has, had his testicles twisted left and right until they got every single confession out of him they could possibly get, including the assassination of John Kennedy? I mean, Khalid Sheikh Muhammad has confessed to everything. He's the planner. He's the brand. So why are we killing people and having our soldiers killed in Afghanistan? All that to say that Barack Obama, in his rhetoric anyway, about Iraq and Afghanistan, is no different from any other political candidate of the two major political parties, Democrat or Republican. If this is just a riff that Barack Obama feels he's got to go through in order to murder the Republican Party for once and for all, then I'm all for it, you know, to get the knuckle draggers to vote Democrat this time. But if he's sincere and gets elected, then I'll spend the next 4 years doing everything I can to undermine whatever constitutes his presidency. Won't you? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.